Today is March 18th, 2014, and I'm Amna Ahmad from the Brooklyn Historical Society. We are here in my home in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, and this interview is part of the Crossing Borders, Bridging Generations Oral History Project. Now, if you would, please introduce yourself.
Yasmin Naji.
And thank you. And for the archives, can you tell me your date of birth and where you were born?
My date of birth is, and I was born in Brooklyn.
Great. So why don't you tell me a little bit about where you come from?
I come from a very mixed background, but mainly Yemeni. I was born here in Brooklyn, and when I was 8 months old, my mother went back to Yemen, and I grew up there till I became 13. While I was living in Yemen, I never actually lived around Yemenis. My community was mostly other kind of Arabs, which were mostly Egyptians and Palestinians. And other than that, my family is a mix, which I'm a mix too. I'm Yemeni, Sudanese. My grandma is from Sudan. So my family leaned towards more the Sudanese side. So if you ask me what I'm most comfortable with, I might say Sudanese more than Yemenis. But growing up in Yemen, I'm kind of mixed. I was, at least when I was 13, I was very confused between who is who and what am I.
So this question of who am I, when you were 13, what do you think you would say?
When I was 13, based on the Arab logic and like the way they think, I would have to say I was Yemeni, just because my dad is Yemeni. That's how it goes. But even in that, it was a little different, because when you're in Yemen, they ask you where you're from, because obviously you're from Yemen, so they ask you where exactly you're from. We lived in the city all my life. I don't know anything other than Sana'a, which is the capital city, but my dad is originally from Ib. And he even lived in Sana'a. So it's kind of a little hard for me to be like, yeah, I'm from Ib, but I don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. So it was like a confusion within a confusion.
Such interesting that your way of identifying yourself was with a place that you didn't really spend much time.
Yeah.
So nowadays, if someone were to ask you, Yasmin, where are you from?
Right now, what would you probably say? like this day right now, if you ask me what I am, I would be like Arab. I'm an Arab American, just because I don't like to go through the whole explanation and whatnot. And also because I feel like I am an Arab, because I'm just mixed of this and that. And I had few of Palestinian, and I had even my family, like, they're mixed also with Egyptians. Mm-hmm. So we do have all that connection with the rest of the Arab world. So that's why I feel like I'm Arab. It's only fair to say I'm Arab, and not only from one country.
So great. You said that you have a Sudanese grandmother, right? And is this your paternal grandmother or your maternal grandmother?
I don't understand the
term. So is it your mother, your
my
grandmother on your
mother's
side?
Your mother's mother. Yes.
And why is it that you think you're a little bit closer to the Sudanese side?
Oh, it's just because my mom and her sisters, they all grew up in Sudan, mm-hmm. until like a very old age. So they were pretty much Sudanese. Mm-hmm. They moved to Yemen, like at college age kind of thing. And we live a very Sudanese style life. We speak all Sudanese at home. We, the people in Yemen, we mostly live with, like, or like associate with are half Yemenis, half Sudanese, like, or mostly Sudanese, or just, we just hang out with the Sudanese families in Yemen. Mm-hmm. So that's why I feel more comfortable with the Sudanese.
So did your mother ever share specific experiences about the time that she was living in Sudan?
Oh, actually, to think about it right now, no. She never did. Yeah. She would never speak about it. That's weird.
Interesting.
I don't know. It's not. I don't know. They would speak about it when they're like the sisters or the siblings are all together. They would sing and they'd be like, oh, I remember this and that. But I don't remember like specific moment that they actually all speak about that, which is very weird. Thank you for letting me know that.
That's something to ask at home, right?
Yeah.
So do you know why they moved from Sudan to Yemen?
Yeah. My grandpa, which is their father, died. Oh. And my grandma felt like the kids didn't know their, you know, their, like, actual land, their, the other side of them. So she took them to Yemen just to grow up and learn about the other, their other side. And she wanted them to just know more. She felt like Yemen is more, have more opportunities for them. Mm-hmm. Versus Sudan, which she said at the time wasn't as developed as Yemen. So that's why she took them all and she moved to Yemen. And she died there, which was beautiful.
So it's interesting how you categorize yourself as an Arab now, today, when you're in the United States, probably because, you know, that's the way Yemenis and Sudanese are categorized and lumped together because it's such a diverse society here. But what would you say some of the cultural differences are between the Sudanese and the Yemeni when we're not lumping them together as this larger category of Arab?
It's not fair for me to speak about Yemenis much because I'm really not, I wasn't, even now that I'm here, I see more Yemenis. I feel like we totally live different in different kind of Yemens every time they speak about Yemen. So I don't feel like it's fair enough for me to speak about them, but I do know like the general things. So in Sudan, it's okay for a woman and a man to be in the same room, even if they're not family. So if they're family friends, whatever, it's okay, which is culturally accepted. And it's okay for them to have mixed weddings. What else? Food is different, of course. The language is very different. If you don't know either of the languages and you're trying to learn it, that's very difficult. Yemenis, they're kind of a little close-minded, I might, let me say. Especially because they're like, I don't know, more traditional.
Traditionally.
Yeah, they stick to the culture very, very much. And yeah, so it's only fair to say that. I don't know anymore.
Yeah, perfect. So I'm always interested to know the stories of the way parents meet, because really all of our stories start with our parents.
True.
So I was wondering if perhaps they had shared their story with you.
They did. It wasn't something out of the ordinary. Because my dad and my mom have the same last name, so maybe their grandparents or great-great-grandparents were related. My dad was friends with her older brothers, and he used to come over at home, and since they were Sudanese, it was okay for my dad to be with the family, you know? So he seen my mother, and she told me they were like brothers and sisters. He would take her, he would take her to school and bring her back, and I'm like, okay. Yeah, that's what we call dating over here. So yeah, she didn't want to say that. She's like, no, you know, I have
yes.
So yeah, so that's how they met, and then after that, he just asked the brother for her hand because since they were friends and whatnot, my uncle was like, yeah, he agreed. He knew the guy. He knew my dad, and he was like, why not? So that's how they met.
That's a great story. So. Certainly not our idea of dating per se here, where we would use the term. That's interesting. So I'm interested to know what the activities and hobbies are that take up your time now.
Now, I'm actually very occupied with reading. I'm taking this one class, Arab-Israeli Conflict. It takes most of my time, where I have to read 200 pages a day or more, thinking that's my only class. But yeah, it's mostly reading. Other than that, I just like to hang out with my friends. The other day, I just went to a shooting range. And once the weather gets better, I'll be out in the park riding bicycles, horses, or whatever I find.
You sound really athletic.
Sometimes.
So why don't you describe where you're studying and what you're studying right now?
Okay, so I study at City College of New York. That's the one in Harlem. I'm studying international relations, concentrating on the Middle East. That's, yeah, basically it.
And what drew you to international relations as a major?
That's a tough question. So I started college thinking that I'm going to go into engineering. So I got accepted to City College as an engineering student, and I was going to major in computer science. I took a semester of that, and I felt very pressured. Thus, I didn't feel happy with my grades or how the classes were. And my parents weren't the kind that would set what you have to be in the future. Like, it's, as long as you do whatever you feel is right, that's fine for them. So it was pretty hard for me because growing up, having your parents telling you what to do and whatnot, especially as Arabs, they're like pretty much set up your life for you. But once you reach college, at least for me, they're like, okay, you could do whatever you want. That was pretty tough for me. So from computer science, I didn't know what to do. I didn't want it. So I spoke to my mother and I was like, Mom, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't think it's suits me. And she's like, whatever, do whatever, anything else. So from that, I went to psychology. I didn't feel it's right. I switched to economics. I didn't like it. I went through a lot of problems and I felt like I don't want to do anything. But then going back, like, I just felt like I took a semester off, and that semester off I cleared my mind and I was like, let's see, what is it that I want to do? Mm-hmm. It's not that quitting on college wasn't an option for my mother. So I had to go back, but I kind of wanted to figure out what I want to do with my life. Mm-hmm. What is going to make me happy? So I thought about everything that I enjoyed, and it was like, what, something I could put my heart into it. Mm-hmm. And going back through my high school essays and whatnot, I seen that my best grades and like my best ideas came out on the Arab topics, especially the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and anything that relates to it. So I felt like that would be my best subject, mm-hmm. or best interest, something that I'm so passionate about that would just take it all out. So right now I'm taking international studies and focusing on all the Arab classes. And I'm taking every Arab class that I can find in school. So, yeah, that's kind of how I ended up in international studies.
Great. So who is this professor that teaches your demanding Arab-Israeli conflict course?
His name is Professor Dale. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he would be happy to know that you're diligently reading.
Yep. He teaches history. Like, the course is a history course.
And I failed to mention at the beginning of the interview that I met you through outreach efforts at the Arab American Association of New York.
True.
So do you want to describe your relation to the association for
okay,
us?
Okay, so at first I started volunteering, actually, at the AAANY, that's the Arab American Association of New York, for my internship. For international relations, we had a class that you must take an internship outside the school. Mm-hmm. So I came to here and I was like, hey, I need an internship. And they were like, fine, here you go. So it was only like I had to do 120 hours, mm-hmm. so that wasn't much. But then after I was done with the 120 hours, they kind of hired me. They liked me, so they hired me, and I became, they gave me an internship, a fellowship to be exact. So now I'm the youth fellow in the association. And the youth fellow, the position is for me to just develop my leadership skills. It was designed, this fellowship, for the Arab youth, to be exact, to empower them and give them chances that we feel like we are not having here enough, especially as being Arab Americans. Mm-hmm. So this program, I'm the first fellow, so this will continue for the Arab kids out there and to give them just the power and connection to everything around them.
So what would you say your everyday experience as a youth fellow on the average day is like? Run me through your average day.
There is no average day at the association. It's amazing because as a youth fellow, I do everything. The organization, what it offers to the people is immigration services, social services, ESL classes, after school programs, and then on top of that, all youth programs which I'm mostly involved in it. So on an average day, I would come in, I would go to the front desk and then help out with casework. Casework is immigration. Mm-hmm. I would help a little bit with that. I would have appointments sometimes. And then I would run upstairs to the ESL class, sometimes help them with their classes if their teacher is absent. Mm-hmm. And then there's a Kitab Club, which is an after-school program for the younger kids. Mm-hmm. And I go there because there is the youth. The youth would be, it's a little different here. Like what back home, what we would call youth is from 30 to 40 or something. Here, the youth are younger, like from 15 to, I don't know, maybe my age, 21 or maybe older. I don't know. I'm not sure of the range over here. Mm-hmm. But so the younger youth, I would say, the high schoolers, would be there. And I like to be around to guide them and tell them how to deal with the younger kids mm-hmm. who are from like first grade to eighth. So, yeah, I'm just there to help the younger youth, to give them just moral support. Just guide them through if any problem happens. And other than that, I do a lot of workshops to just bring, because I feel like the Arab Americans are not totally, we're our own thing. We're not Americans and we're not Arabs. We're something in middle. And that something in the middle, I'm trying to make it clear to those younger youth that it's okay to be that in the middle. We are something special.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that being Arab and being American are opposed to one another, or why would you explain that they are in the middle?
They're in, just because, like, okay, so when right now we're in America, we're Arabs, but yet we're not so Americans. There are still things that are ayyub, which is like not allowed, and there's things that are haram. We still have that unique I don't know, there's something unique about us where we're not totally Americans, like culturally wise, family, we're very family oriented for the most part. Very, I don't know, the way we eat, the way we, I don't know, we're just different, I feel. And then back home, every time we go back home, just for the simple fact that you didn't live there for like, you didn't live there for a while and you became Americanized, that's it. They don't consider you one of them. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're like special. We're kind of in our, it's not something bad, it's totally something fine. I see it as a beautiful thing. We're something unique, the product of both worlds.
Yeah, I think your characterization is really fascinating. So I'm wondering, what is the reception of your characterization of being Arab and American at the same time? For coming from these kids, what's their reaction to the way you characterize the different poles of being both Arab and American?
They kind of, like, they feel like they fall into it, mm-hmm. but then they're just afraid of just being so different. You know, they're like, no, we're Americans. Mm-hmm. And then the recent immigrants, they're like, no, we're Arabs. But then just give them a few years, those recent immigrants, they're like, no, we're Americans. So mm-hmm. it's just like kind of denial. They don't want to be the new thing. We're afraid of being something different from everybody else. That's their reaction. But most of them, like when I'm talking to them about it, you see them nodding their head. You see them understanding it. So I had another workshop the other day where I told the kids, like, okay, they're not kids, they're youth. I was telling them, okay, so today we're going to learn Debka. They were like, oh, okay, cool. You know, they all turned, like, suddenly they all started speaking Arabic. They started singing Arab song, and like you can see that they're switching to Arab. And I was just like, okay, cool. And then I was like, okay, and we're going to mix it with hip-hop. And then you just see their faces changing, like, what? Yeah, I like that. You know, and they started throwing out ideas there, and they're like, oh, how about this song with that song? And then I was like, see, this is exactly what I'm talking about. We're in the middle. We're in between this and that, where we understand both things, and we can just make it something unique. And they really loved the idea, and they started actually dancing. They showed off their moves, and they were having fun with it. And I was like, as we were doing it at the end of the workshop, I'm like, see what I mean? We're Arab Americans. They're like, okay. So they are starting to accept the idea, but slowly. It's just the way that you give it to them. You present the idea to them.
Yeah, definitely. So you explained this feeling of when Arab Americans go back to their countries of origin, they feel kind of strange just by virtue of the fact that they've been in America. They're considered outsiders by some people. So did you have that experience personally? Or
yes, definitely. When I came here, like I was 13 when I came here. So when I went back, it was 3 years later, so I was 15. 3 years later, I felt like it was nothing because it went by so fast for me over here, at least. Mm-hmm. So, but when I went back, kind of the language, I kind of totally forgot a lot of Arabic words because I wasn't practicing it over here because my mother made, like, she was concerned about us not catching up with the English, even though we studied British English back in Yemen. Mm-hmm. So when we came here, we were prepared. We just had to switch the accents, which was the toughest thing. So she spoke to us only in English home for the first few years, and she would only allow us to watch English shows just for us to adjust. So when we went back to Yemen, we were actually so Americanized. I mean, like, language-wise, we were so... We got used to it. We were just speaking English to them 24/7. And that's when they started feeling uncomfortable, like our families. They were like, well, you've just been there for 3 years. What's going on? Why did you come so Americanized? And then the way you dress, the way you talk, the way you act, I don't know. The New Yorker, actually, to be exact. The New Yorker style just grow into people so fast, I feel. Because I have my cousin who came from Yemen last year. Mm-hmm. And she just went this summer. And everyone is telling her, oh, you changed. Oh, you're not Arab anymore. Oh, you're too Americanized right now. And I don't understand why that's... I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's certainly an interesting perspective that you have there. Have you had the opportunity to head back to Yemen after that time, or...?
Yeah. We kind of go every 3 years. Mm-hmm. I went back, I believe, in 2012, and then 2011, and then 2013, last year. But last year was terrible, because it was the whole war going on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I had to come back fast. Mid-Ramadan, I didn't even get to finish Ramadan over there, which was terrible. Yeah.
So what was the experience like during the
war? Okay, maybe I went to Yemen a little more. I went 3 times. So I just don't remember the years exactly.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay, so the other 2 years that when I went back, Yemen was getting so... I mean, it was only Sana'a that I go to, the main city. It was getting better and more like, developed and more, let's say, westernized, which is not fair to use. But it was getting up there, like the streets were getting better, where they fixed them. And the transportation was way better. And everything was just going up. And then when I went last year, it just got terrible because everything was destroyed because of the war, because of the revolution. Everything was just a mess. Other than that, I felt like Yemen went backwards. Because it was the war. A lot of people came out from the villages, and city people are not like the village people. Mm-hmm. So just to see those village people around carrying guns, topless, with crazy hair, crazy long hair, it was just terrifying. I seen snipers on the roofs, and buildings with bullet holes, and it was just not a pretty sight, not how I remembered Sana'a. Even before I left, and then just seeing it going downhill again was terrible.
No, that is terrible. So I'm hoping that no one in your family or that you knew was hurt in the conflict.
Oh, no, thank God, alhamdulillah, nobody, yeah. We stay out of it.
So it seems that you're very in touch with the Arab community in Brooklyn, as well as still in touch over the years with Yemen. Mm-hmm. So... recently, the community here has been the target of surveillance by the NYPD, probably other sources as well. Is that one of the points of contention that has come up within maybe the Kitab Club or other aspects of the AAANY? And if so, how did you guys deal with them?
It was actually not only recently, it started since the September 11. Mm-hmm. The surveillance got just so heavy. It just got so heavy. And actually recently, a leaked NYPD document came out listing our organization and Linda, which is the main, the boss, as terrorists and potential terrorist group and organization, which was like terrible. How could they label such an organization that are helping people out? We're filling something that the government is not willing to fill up. Like, there is a gap that our association is giving, and there's a lot of people that are just volunteering there, just giving their time up just to help others, and then they would list it as a potential terrorist organization just for us being Arabs or Muslims. It's just like, it was terrible. We dealt with it. We actually went to a rally, and we do a lot of protests, a lot of what was the last thing we did? We did a press conference in front of Police Plaza. We tried to get the word, our word out there. Sometimes, like, the feedback is positive. Most of the time, it's not. Mm. But we try.
So what's an example of some positive feedback that you've been getting and negative feedback in the way that you responded to this particular problem of surveillance?
The positive is, like, the beauty of New York City is, like, it's so diverse, and I feel like people are very open-minded and willing to understand new ideas. So sometimes when we're doing rallies and whatnot, I witness people just coming up to us and ask, oh, what is this about? And then we explain it to them. They're like, okay, we're up with it. We're with you guys. We believe in this. And they're standing with us, totally strangers that we just see in the streets. Negatives are just, like, some people are still in their that bubble, or they're just still ignorant. They throw hurtful comments. Like, one time we were actually doing voter registrations, and we were going door to door to people and trying to get them to register for voting. And I knocked the door on this white resident, and an old lady opened the door, and she was like, oh, what do you want? So I was explaining things to her, and the whole time she was looking straight at me, and I'm over here like showing her the paper, like, look over here. But she was just looking straight at me. She goes like, I would sign this, but I wish not a lot of terrorists came to this country. It was a terrible feeling for me. I was like, I didn't know what to say. And at the same time, I felt like, oh, I'm representing the AAANY. So I couldn't say anything back. And at the same time, she was an old lady. I didn't feel like disrespecting her in any way. And I was in a shock, because being in New York City, feeling comfortable in my own zone, you know, like, this is my place. This is my country. This is my city. You're not going to come and tell me that. Mm-hmm. So it was just, I don't know. I just looked at her and I'm like, oh, well, thank you very much. And I walked away. Maybe I should have done more. Or said something.
Well, that's, I understand why that experience would stick with you.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And then also, not only are you an Arab individual living in New York City, but you're an Arab woman and you happen to be a hijabi. So what has the experience been with how people approach you as a woman who wears a veil in the city during your time here?
If you say the city, which is Manhattan, a lot of the people are not from New York, so it's pretty cute how they come up to me and they're like, oh my god, what is that in your head? I'm like, oh, the scarf. Like, in the winter, it's not as bad because people think it's like just you have a scarf around because you're cold, but in the summertime, it's when people come up and start taking pictures with you and you just feel famous. not much of a negative energy about it, especially here in New York City, as I would say. It's just, I feel a little uncomfortable when I go apply for a job. Mm. And the first thing, they would just look up at you and look at your head. They'd be like, oh, well, okay, we'll call you. You know, you just know. But that was, I applied when I was younger. I didn't have enough experience. But I still don't think that would change. People would still look at the hijab and be like, no. I don't see a lot of hijabis working outside. I don't know. It's just, I don't know.
So I know it's difficult to predict the future, but I often ask people to do so. Uh-huh. What do you think it would take for people to approach a woman wearing a hijab during a job interview as though she were any other woman or man?
Okay, the future, I don't know. I mean, just because I love New York City so much, and I feel like there is always hope in it, because we're all diverse, there will be always, like, a chance for an Arab woman to get somewhere in life, a hijabi.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Linda is a pretty great example, a strong woman, hijabi woman, who's doing a lot for her community. One day, inshallah, she will maybe become a mayor or something, who knows. And hopefully, so once the people see how we aren't so different and how we're helping out and we're just like them, and a piece of clothing on our head doesn't makes it different, they'll just accept us. Just recently, my cousin, she lives in Colorado, and she plays soccer. She wears a hijab.
Mm-hmm.
And this year was her first game or something. It was a pretty big deal. And the referee didn't let her play because of the hijab.
Wow.
Yeah. So she was pretty hurt, but her teammates were great enough to post up a picture of all of them wearing hijab in support for Sama, which was pretty cute because they're, like, wearing their shorts with the hijab. And the picture really went viral. It went all over the internet. And right now they're still seeing the case, but that day they all did play with the hijab on, all of them.
Wow.
They were like, we're not going to play unless you let us play this way. And Samah would play with us. That's my cousin's name.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty cool. Like, see, that's in Colorado, where it's, like, mainly white people. Not to say that all people are white people are alike, or any people or general race in general are, like, alike. But they started accepting the idea over there. And there aren't many Arabs or hijabis over there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty tough for my cousins. But that was just a touching, beautiful beginning, I would say.
That's a really touching story that I hope they won the game.
I don't know.
that was not too, as important.
I was so I was mad about the whole not letting her play, so I didn't really ask if they won or not.
Yes, indeed. So one thing I left unasked when we were discussing your time in Yemen and your adjustment period back in the United States was the reason why your family decided to come back here.
My mom's plan was for us all to come here and get our college degrees from here.
Mm-hmm.
So that was her main thing. When we came back here, I was 13, so I just started high school over here. That wasn't her plan, but she just felt like Yemen was getting a little hard, and she started seeing things that she didn't like. She would say, till this day, she will say unspeakable things. She doesn't want to discuss them with me. She still feels like I'm a little kid, but she wasn't feeling comfortable. My mother never liked it in Yemen much because of the discrimination, the women were always discriminated against, and because my mother is a strong lady. She owned a daycare, so she was a businesswoman, mm-hmm. in a sense. And she used to drive. My dad is totally okay with it. And my dad doesn't really like the chamash, the face cover. But my mother still wore it anyways, because the people kept bothering her if she's not wearing it. So she kept getting kind of bullied, let's say, by the Yemeni society.
Mm-hmm.
And because she was different, it's just like anywhere else. If you're different, people will bother you. And once they started figuring out that we're not pure Yemenis, people started bothering us in the streets. So if she felt like Yemen wasn't safe for us anymore. I don't remember much of that because it really doesn't bother me if someone calls me Sudanese. But in Yemen, it was like, they would say it in a negative way. It's just like here calling someone, I don't know. I don't want to say that word. But yeah. Mainly it was for education, but was also because she didn't feel comfortable anymore.
So when you entered the U.S., you went straight to high school, or was there still some time that you were in junior high?
I went straight into high school. I finished eighth grade there, and I came here in the summer right away. And also, I forgot, oh my God, okay, right. One of the reasons why she picked that time is because my aunt was pregnant, and she was alone. So the main reason why my mother went back to Yemen when she had me is because it was so difficult for her to raise me up. She was getting bored. There was no one around. So she was like, she didn't want her sister, her younger sister, to feel the same way. So we came kind of to just, at that time exactly, to just help her out. Mm-hmm. And then 2 weeks later after we arrived, she gave birth to a beautiful girl named Sara. That's my little baby.
Aww.
Yeah. So that was the reason why we chose that time.
That's very sweet. So I think people find high school difficult enough when they're not switching countries. So what was your adjustment period like when moving and when starting a new school?
A lot of people, when I tell them this story, think I'm lying. But since I feel like it's because I was in a British school back in Yemen, so I barely had any Arabic classes. The only Arabic class that I took was Arabi and Islamic studies and Quran. Mm-hmm. Everything else was in English. So it was pretty easy for me to adjust. Actually, it was even easier than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. Since we take advanced math and sciences back home, when I came here, I felt like it was a joke. It was seriously a joke. I would help the teacher out, the math teacher in class. I would point out the wrong, where he made mistakes. It was kind of pretty embarrassing for him, for a student that just came from abroad, fixing his mistakes and correcting him and calling him out. So at the time, we had Math A, Math B, which Math A took 2 years and Math B took 1 year, or the opposite. Mm-hmm. But I took the Regents in mid-year, which was supposed to take the whole year. Mm-hmm. I took it in mid-semester, and I passed it, it was like around a 90-something. Mm-hmm. And then the next one, the Math B, that was 2 years, whatever, one of them was 2 years. Yeah. I took it also the next year, and I passed it. So I had a whole gap of a year and a half of math that I'm done with. So I took calculus in high school, which wasn't something many people did.
And which high school did you attend?
It was in the John Jay building. It's in 7th Avenue. The school itself, they were divided into like 4 schools. My school was called the Secondary School for Research.
And do you have siblings?
I have 2 younger brothers.
2 younger brothers. And do you think that they had similar experiences as you?
No. Unfortunately, they came a little too young. Which they're missing out. I feel like they're missing out on the other side.
So race is not something that is biological. It's a construct that is created by people, and it's not always apparent to young children. So I was wondering if you remember a time when race actually became apparent to you. I know that you may have been in the context of Yemen at that point.
Like my race, like just being aware of where I am from exactly?
Or just race in general, the way people are categorized.
That I felt in Yemen. It's just because like I told you earlier, just the whole Sudanese side, they look down at it. So it's just like, oh, no, you just say you're Yemenis. And I'm just like, I didn't feel comfortable about it. Because in our household, we're all more Sudanese than Yemenis. We speak Sudanese. We eat Sudanese food. We do mostly, I don't know, we're brought up in a way that we're just Sudanese more than Yemeni. Mm-hmm. We do have the Yemeni in us, just not as strong as Sudanese. It would just be something like over here, when you're outside your house, you're speaking English, you're dealing with everybody in English, and then when you come back home, it's all Arabi, if you're an Arab. So for us over there, it was like, oh, you're outside your house, you're speaking Yemeni, you're dealing with Yemenis, and then once you come back home, you just to your comfort zone, it was Sudanese. Mm-hmm. That's how I felt. So my race at the time, I was labeled as Yemeni. I didn't feel comfortable about it, even at a young age. But yeah.
And so your mother, part of the reason why she decided to move the family to the U.S. Mm-hmm. was because of the sense of bullying that she felt for being different. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what she encountered once she arrived in America.
I feel like it was easy for her because mm-hmm. she had her brother and sister here. Mm-hmm. The country wasn't as bad as it was a few years ago when she had me. Okay, 20 years ago. So it was easier just because, like I said, her brother and her sister were here. It was just easier. They set up the way for her. They introduced her to more Arabs. And she was surprised to see all these Arabs and Yemenis and Sudanese that she was like, oh, I wish they were here before. So it was easy on her. Alhamdulillah.
That's great. So she found what she was looking for.
Not to be exactly what she's looking for. It's just, yeah, she's more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great. So we're currently living in the era of a mixed heritage president.
Right.
And I was wondering whether you had expected such a thing to occur.
To tell you the truth, it was about time. I needed some change. It was amazing seeing a mixed president, which was like shocking because I felt like other than New York, everybody else is like very racist and just, I don't know, but just, it was beautiful.
Great. And I was wondering whether you think of him as mixed heritage or whether you think of him as more black as a categorization of his race or ethnicity.
I'm not in a position to tell. Like, I wouldn't say anything. That's up to him to say it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to label anybody unless everybody labels themselves the way they want to. Other than that, just like I feel like wrong.
Yeah, I mean, both labels are used. There are categories for...
If you want to be black, just black, he's just black, fine. If you want to be mixed, that's fine with me, as long as he was like, I don't know, I see something beautiful in front of me, something... America's changing. That's what I like.
Great. And so there are various international relations-related topics that are demanding people's attention, particularly in the Arab world right now. So I was wondering whether you have any feelings or feedback about what's going on in certain areas of the Middle East that you feel strongly about or that you'd like to share.
Like the whole uprising and everything else mm-hmm. that's going on? Mm-hmm. Like I was telling you before, with my whole major, I was always passionate about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So that had been on my mind ever since... Maybe even from before, from when I was in Yemen, when I was younger. That was like, it was always interesting to me. But I didn't know that Israel actually existed until I came here.
Oh.
Which is, because in the Arab world, we don't recognize it. So in our maps and whatnot, it's only Palestine. So when we come here, it's like you learn the truth. Or what America would like to call it as a truth, because back there, that's what we see as a truth. So anyways, but... other than that, it's like the whole uprising. I'm actually taking a class about that right now in the history of the modern Arab world, which mm-hmm. we were talking about the uprising only. And I feel like labeling it that way is not what it should be, just because I don't feel like it's an uprising at this point, or the Arab Spring.
Mm-hmm.
I feel it's just they're destroying each other. That's mm-hmm. what I feel like what it is. Simply because it's like mostly like Syria, for example, it's a civil war. It's not about bringing back the regime anymore. It's just like they're killing one another, which is terrible. So is it in Lebanon. Been there for a few years like that. And Yemen, too, it started becoming a civil war where just the power, so it's just each faction is just fighting for power, which that's not what I wanted to see the Middle East as. It might take a few years for them to get better. But yeah, another way that I feel like I'm still connected, of course, to the Middle East strongly, and I do whatever I can to help. So the crisis that are happening in Syria is affecting us in everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we were in the Middle East or we were here, like just for us being here and just seeing it, we are safe over here, but we see this thing. We see the Syrian refugees here and there in the cold, and they were just wearing nothing. It's terrible. It's a terrible sight. So right now at the association, what I'm doing is a project where we're going to have a goods drive just to take just to collect medicines, books, so school supplies, dried food, maybe some clothes, blankets, like those things that you need in life, the essentials. Just to help the Syrians, and inshallah the whole community will get into this. We did this last year, we did it with clothes, mm-hmm. and the community was amazing. Like seriously, the amount of things they brought in, they donated, it was just overwhelming, and it was just great. So this time we're planning to do just a good strive where inshallah we're going to help out in the least ways possible.
That's really great to hear that you guys are mobilizing around that issue, because it's unfortunately only been getting worse.
Yeah.
And do you live in Bay Ridge or?
I actually don't. I live in Prospect Park South.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really have any Arabs there. That's why I was like, I need something Arab. When I came here, I felt great. It's just the connection between both worlds. It's perfect.
So how would you describe your community in Prospect Park?
To be honest, the neighborhood that I live in is so quiet. You barely know your neighbors, which is terrible. The only people that I know are like the two houses next to us, which they're Indians and Guyanese. And then the house right next to us are Spanish. And everybody's like in their own bubble,
mm-hmm.
which I don't like. You see, I like Bay Ridge because everybody knows each other. It might be bad, but it's still great. I love it. But my neighborhood is just like, it's a mix, but very quiet. Deadly quiet.
So I assume you prefer to spend more of your time
in Bay Ridge,
Bay Ridge, yeah.
I'm barely in my neighborhood because the days that I'm not here in Bay Ridge, I'm in Harlem in college. And I hang out in the city afterwards because I'm right there.
Why not?
Yeah. It's like I'm home. Nothing's dead. It's always dead. Even in the summer when you would think kids would come out, we'd be the loudest kids in the street. Always the Arabs being the loudest. But yeah.
So what year are you in terms of your education?
Lower junior, so third year.
Great. And so in a few years when you will be entering the workforce, what are your aspirations for the future?
Oh, that terrifies me. Just knowing that I'm going to be done in like 3 semesters just kills me slowly. I don't know. I'm very terrified. I really don't know what I want to do. Mostly I want to keep doing what I'm doing at the AAA NY. But I do feel like I have to let go and try other things. Just because I like to try everything. Because before, when I was maybe in high school, I worked with a dentist,
mm-hmm.
just to see how the medical field was, and I kind of totally hated it, so that was it for medical side. And then I tried working in retail stores with Yemenis. It wasn't the thing for me. So finally I fell in love with what I would do at the Jamia, because it's just social work, just helping the community. That's something I feel like I'm going to do for the rest of my life. That's something I'm attached to. So, but there's 2 more things that I want to try before I settle down for a career or whatever you want to call it, which is banking and real estate.
And because the AAANY has been such a formative experience for you, are there any aspects of the operations of the organization that you would like to change at all or that you would like to add on to?
There is a lot of things that need to be done. Like, nothing is perfect, but it's just like, I don't know. There's something special about the AAA NY.
Mm-hmm.
There is nobody who's on top of each other. There is no boss. Like, even though they're labeled as your boss, they're labeled as your supervisor, but really, there is nothing. And I love that. There is nobody that would force you to do anything. It's just more of a, oh, you should do this. It's like more of a friendly environment where every single person is helping each other, even if they're doing something totally different. For example, I'm the youth fellow, and I'm doing this Syrian thing, mm-hmm. this Syrian good drive, and that's a huge project for me, and if not for my help of my coworkers, I would totally reject the idea. But the youth leader, is willing to help me out. It makes sense because he's the youth leader. But then also Frances, that you're going to interview soon. Well, also, she's the dream organizer. Mm-hmm. She will also be helping me. And also other our ex-coworker, Arwa, she will also be helping me, who did it last year. She was the organizer. So we have just a lot of support, and we support one another in the Jamaia, the association. Another thing that maybe something that I would like to add, or just love to see in the Jamaia, the association, I'm sorry, I'm just used to saying the Jamaia.
No, it's fine.
Is just more programs for the youth. Before I came, there wasn't much, and I'm trying to bring in more programs to keep the youth involved, because the most important part of the community are the youth, mm-hmm. or else that's how I see it. So building on from the youth, our generation will become better. The next community will be better, just because we start young. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the association should focus more on the youth, which we're trying our best right now. But I would like if I come back in 2 or 3 years to the association, I want it to be run by more youth, mm-hmm. which is,
yeah,
that would be great.
I think that's a great aspiration of itself for the future. So I'm wondering if any specific experiences have stuck out at you during your time dealing specifically with individuals who came to the AAANY in need in some aspect, some experience that sort of sticks in your mind.
That's a tough question, because like seriously, I'm telling you, the AAANY is a special place where everything is just every day is important. Mm-hmm. Every person is just have a different story, and a lot of them their stories stick out to me. I don't know, maybe the most things that stick out to me is when older the parents come to me and be like, oh, my kids, they start complaining about their kids to me, feeling that, I don't know, I'm a counselor, and I start advising them. I'm like, listen, your kids aren't recognized, they're this and that, and I give them advices, and they like my advices, and they come back to me. I like that, and I don't know, it's just funny to me. Other than that, I'm telling you, there's a lot of great things that are happening. Maybe the thing that had the most impact on me till this day was last year when they did the clothes drive for Syria. Yeah. It was just lovely seeing all the donated clothes and all the people that actually came afterwards to separate and fold the clothes into containers and stuff. I was surprised. I was shocked.
And the people that come to contribute to these drives that you guys run, mm-hmm. Are they specifically members of the Arab community, or are there sometimes other members of the Bay Ridge community that will contribute?
The few days that I did help out, it was mainly from Bay Ridge. Mm-hmm. Some of them were non-Arabs, non-Muslims, mm-hmm. but they were mostly strictly from Bay Ridge. But the beautiful thing was they weren't only Arabs and Muslims. Some just people living around, they're like, oh, we heard there's a community service thing over here, we just wanted to help out. Oh, we heard it's for Syria. Oh, I'm interested in the topic. Oh, that's great. So, you know, a lot of positive energy, I'm telling you, in the AAANY.
That's really great. I'm very happy that you're there. So, again, I hate to ask people to predict the future, but I think a lot might come out of it. Mm-hmm. So if someone is listening to this interview, let's say 100 years in the future, what do you hope that they will get out of listening to your story?
I hope they just laugh and see that the things that I'm saying right now, kind of unbelievable, the whole discriminations and things. They were like, oh, wow, they had that back then. I can't believe that, you know? Just like how now we look back at slavery and be like, whoa, that was a few years ago. It's not even that old. So maybe in the future, none of this will happen. The world will become a better place. Who knows? I just want whoever is listening to me 100 years later to just be laughing at whatever I said and be like, wow, they were terrible back then. Yep, I hope that happens.
Well, yeah, I mean, I hope they can look back and laugh as well. So I think this might be a great place to wrap up. So do you have any further comments or questions, anything that you'd like to share about your story before we wrap up?
I kind of said everything. It's just I'm glad to just be this mix. I would never trade it for anything. Being partly Arab, whatever, all these Arab little things that they're all mixed, and then just be an American, which I haven't really spoke about. But yeah, I just love the experience. I just love this, and I just love everything. I love living there. I love moving here, and I just felt like it was a perfect time for me to move in here. And like I said, inshallah, in a few years, people will look back and just laugh about all these discriminations and things. That's about it.
Great. Well, it's been an honor to interview you, Yasmeen. And yeah, so I guess we'll end here. Thank you.